first look at the bear, somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. And my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy, boy,
oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone.
Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute. I'm
Tracy. Oh, that's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life. So listen to me, get up off your knees, 'cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't go around with your head hung down. Well, I wouldn't let the little girl know. Let her know that she made me feel like a clown. There are a whole lot of girls looking for a good man like you. Oh, but you'll never meet them if you give up now and say your life is true. Then she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be a man. You gotta take a stand. So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be strong.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Lovely day here in Hawaii, Nay, and absolutely excited. This is the last day of the year for a conversation before the big feast. So if you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like to talk about, wish someone a happy Christmas or Hanukkah or belated birthday, feel free to call in. This is the wish day today, so feel free to call in. And the number, 888-5204. Anything's on the table. I was going to play you some of the Animal Farm today, and I'm trying to figure out which excerpts. Many of you are probably familiar with the Animal Farm. George Orwell, back in the 40s, wrote this story about, basically it's about communism, I would say, but the reality is it has a lot of parallels with us today, and you're developing a very noticeable haves and have-nots in our society here. So I was reading the newspaper today, and many of things jump out at you, and it's like, where do we start? What is it that we should be concerned with? And we started the year with the homeless having nowhere to go. We started the year with the mayor chasing them around. We also ended the year, I shared with you that our friend Mr. Ray Soon disclosed to us that certain things that would be important to the mayor and anybody else in his administration to withhold information and discuss it behind closed doors, to even include the homeless issue. And it's unfortunate that we define this thing as the homeless issue, as if the people that are out there have no homes or a permanent address today were people who acted badly in their lives or what have you, when in fact the way the society is structured now, with costs and everything, there's a fee. You take a car if you even. When the mayor was chasing people about sleeping in the cars and sleeping, and not just the mayor, the whole group of people, these very fancy people who promised that if you voted me in, and I can fix this, and I have this great vision, and I can put everything together. And so it says two things about that I'd like to share with you. One, these people aren't worth two nickels that make these promises, because they don't have the intellect or the emotional connection or the sincerity to do anything. And they're not kind enough in their hearts. We've seen enough examples of kindness. It's as if we allow people to stay in a park, for example, they've committed some horrendous crime. But when reality is that you, as a manager, as a legislator, as an employee or of the agencies that is tasked with these things, failed. And I mean failed, because the person that's homeless has little to do with anything. So you take, you don't control the rent, you allow the building and the diminishing of the available. The numbers of see a drastic decrease. I would describe it as overnight, but that would be a little exaggerated. But somewhat close to being overnight. And we watch, turn on the news, we read the newspaper, and we see that this mayor is chasing the people again. If it's not Kakaako, it's Pearl Harbor. If it's not Pearl Harbor, it's the bike path. If it's not the bike path, it's downtown Kakaako. If it's not there, it's Waianae. So what is with all of us that we tend to vote people in and not hold them accountable? Instead, we chastise and frown upon the people that are actually having to live without a house. Why is it? Is that the easy way out? I'm really interested in knowing how we have come to accept this vicious cycle. And if homelessness is a crime, then why don't we have mismanagement and bureaucracies a crime? Because you take oath, we see that monies were issued, acquired, and we see that money was not used for these purposes here in the city, in the state. And we get one promise after the other. And they're all going to take care of things. In the meantime, the high rises are increasing. The high cost of living is increasing. We're catering to a Macau or some rich section of the world. We want to be in step with them. But it's the people that live here. And we introduced many of things. We said, well, they're homeless. And the reason they're homeless is that some cities put their people on the plane and send them here with a one-way ticket, And the kinds of excuses that we used or use to explain this thing away, when in fact it's squarely in our laps. We have crappy people for managing. I read this morning, and just hearing in the recent news, where we see one island there goes out of business, and so what happens? Where are these fancy people that can manage our affairs and that promises if you vote for me? Where are they? We don't see their faces when it's a failure. They all hide. And when you have failure in business, supposedly, many of these businesses get tax breaks, and they're going to give tax breaks because they're going to fuel the economy, and they're going to fuel the economy and going to give jobs, and they're going to give jobs, and they're going to, that money will be somehow directly or indirectly benefiting our economy, so therefore we'll take off some of the pressures on the homeless or houseless. And the reality is, we lie, and you and I sit back and we accept it, and we're shocked. We see the series of homeless. Now, what is the fate of the homeless? And the homeless is this, and the homeless is that, and you know, why don't we just say tonight we're going to have a story on evil people? You know, the homeless, because that's what we treat them as, if they've committed some crime. When in fact, it's just you or me, or any of us could have hardship. And we say that we have addictions, and we understand that now. You know, even in the workplace, the people with jobs can use it as a defense. Well, I have a drug problem. I have a drinking problem. It's an addiction. So therefore, with an addiction, you must offer treatment. But instead, many of them find their way to the streets because we don't see the careful watch that is needed by our legislators to ensure that employers and that employ people adhere and observe those rules. Giving medical care, giving attention, giving counseling to the people. Instead, they end up firing. But our legislators give these tax breaks, and it sounds great. I mean, I would love a tax break too, any given time. But they wrap themselves up in that, and then if it's a new building or new situations, you'll see them out there with their sticks poking holes in the dirt, pretending that this signifying that it's a new development and what have you. And everybody's going to benefit from this flourishing business. And as soon as that photo opportunity disappears, we then hear nothing of it. And as soon as that business fails, we never see those people with those sticks poking holes in the ground or anything. And it has become the common sight that somehow you and I have learned to accept this practice, this gyration, this new dance. And you take, for example, the building there that they say one company is moving out, and it's $40 million, so they're going to. Who in their right mind would claim to be good managers and then not see a business coming? And I thought that they tried to get a loan or get some kind of financial package out on there, but the state denied it. So why would the state deny island there alone when they know they're building a building for $40 million that would possibly be used by island there? Doesn't make sense, does it? But then it's not meant to make sense, especially if you're a politician in the state. And I, in the spirit of trying to be just straight across the board, being objective, but also being calling it a spade when it is the need to call it. But I was drawing some parallels just the other day, looking at how our friend Donald Trump is approaching things. And I've said this before. Mr. Trump can take some plays from the playbook of the local politicians here in this state. We squander money. We're bad managers. Well, they accuse him of being a bad manager. We spend money hand over fist, and we give contracts, as I showed you in my work on the city's contract with the PSI and what have you, where defaults on contracts and totaling some $50-plus million dollars. That's with the state, city, and other agencies. And you didn't hear anything. You didn't hear a single legislator speak out, ask questions, get outraged, or anything. $60 million, I know, is really chump change. It really not that big of an amount of money. You know, and I understand. We just spend that every day. Everybody has 60 mil in their pockets. But imagine $60 million, and I just take that figure. It was more or less, but imagine you engage in that activity and contract, and you allot the contract, and nothing happens. But you say, well, this contract is going to be infrastructure. We're going to build bridges. We're going to fix the bridge. Well, and that's going to be an infusion into the economy. It's going to stimulate in that, you know, in this little micro cosm. But nothing happens. So that community that would have benefited from that, and I know I'm going to sound like I'm scattering, but it is this fragmented, or the fragmentation that exists in this state and its economy. I'm surprised we don't have many more buildings and being emptied or torn down for new condos and what have you, because that seemed to be the thing that's fueling the interest or the economy of the taxpayer, of the legislators. When I say legislators, city and county of Honolulu and what have you. And it clearly, I think I'm half right, if not all completely right. And that is, we have a defunct or dysfunctional or inadequate sewage treatment plant and the process of treating sewage. And we won't rush to get that done. But our city councilmen, city councilwoman, legislators, go ahead and approve anything related to that, the development or permits to build buildings, to trade land, to lease land from HCDA and have it given to somehow Howard Hughes Corporation, get some of the land through Kaka'ako. But with it's more development. But you don't see anything to do with bringing up our sewer lines to a standard that we can avoid spills and pollution. So we look back, as I'm saying initially, I'm talking about the homeless, but when you look at all of this, is it really the fault of the homeless individual or the houseless individual? Should we not look at it a different way rather than those are failed people, people who didn't manage their affairs? But given the climate, the business climate here, and the emphasis on projects with the theory and the sales pitch that it's going to bring jobs. And I would say if that's true, and this is just food for thought, or I mean pulling at the loose threads, how on earth can we have a $20 billion project such as the rail, and it'll probably be more, $20 billion, and many of the people that are homeless are looking for jobs, but some of them don't have jobs. How is it that we could have a $20 billion infrastructure project and have such an increase in homeless people? So it's a big lie. We're going to hire a lot of local people, and I've spoken to many of the workers on the rail, for example, and many of them are not local. If you go down to Ala Moana Park just sit there and listen to some of the people that are building these high-rises and listen to the varied languages that they're speaking, it's not English. So, because did they train the many people? Do we have the manpower to and the expertise here locally to build these monstrosities? But when they say that this effort is going to, these projects are going to fuel the economy and be good for everybody, much of it is not. And so our legislators, they fail in protecting the interests of the homeless or the interests of any citizen. Hardship falls on anyone. You could have a medical condition, and that will just completely, and I know many of you sit there and you say, well, I'm pretty comfortable, I manage my affairs. Well, I can tell you a list of people that manage their affairs, but hardship fell on them because an unexpected death in the family, or an illness in the family, or hardship developed, and the breadwinner was taken out of play. And that breadwinner could be any of us, you, me, and we need a safety net. And the safety net comes in the form of an understanding, a legislative process that is conducive to thinking about people, because we are the best product there is. That's what this entire thing is about, because clearly it ain't about the environment. Because I can tell you, and we'll do that shortly, what it is that they think about the environment. But something have to give. We see in the papers and other sources, well, Hawaii has the highest per capita of homeless. But Hawaii has a $20 billion infrastructure project and got buildings coming up like the state bird is no longer the bird that was named. It's no longer that, the official name. It's a crane. And I mean the cranes is lifting the heavy equipment going up to build these high-rises. They dock the skyline. And I dare to talk about this and in this fashion is to say that I do this because it's kind of sickening to listen to smart people say dumb things. And they're just, if you can hear many of the people talk about how evil, quoting them, the evil and how useless and all of these terms used to describe the homeless. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you're not even coming close to, you can't form your lips or shape your lips to have them to say that your legislators and your lawmakers are failing. Can't bring yourself to saying that. And the homeless or the houseless people, they're not looking for sympathy. And they don't want you to empathize with them either. But they do know that you are potentially just like them, whether you like to know it or not, or be that you're sitting there as possibly the next victim. And how you will end up being there potentially is when there is more infrastructure needed, such as that $20 billion rail to complete it, they're going to want more taxes from you. And when you can't pay the taxes, they're going to put a lien on your property. And when you can't pay the lien, or when you go to sell it, but they don't want to wait that long, because if they just waited for a lien, then it would be a little different. You've got some borrowed time. But they want their taxes now, because they need to pay the man. So your taxes go up, you get an order, and this order comes in the form of you have so many days, you've missed paying, you can't afford to pay your taxes, or it's an increase. Now what do? You take out a loan, you take out equity, but eventually that diminishes or comes to a day that it won't be beneficial. So now you become homeless because you can't afford to pay the utilities, the taxes, the fees for your car. The entire process is one that is consuming every drop of life's blood in you as it relates to your finances. Not many people speak in these terms about why do we see homeless. They're doing, many of them are drug addicts, and many of them are mentally ill. Well, the people that are really mentally ill was in government that sells you the same thing, the same lies, the same ineffective management in government and policies and procedures, is the same people that will tell you, well, you know, what the definition of crazy is, when you are insane, is when you do the same thing over and over and get the same results. Well, why don't they apply that to their actions? And I say this because, once again, these are human beings. Human beings. They're not failed people. They are not people who are all on drugs. And then I would say vicariously, the government is responsible, because after a while, if you keep getting socked and socked and soaked for your dollars and your monies, and it'll drive me to drinking and doing drugs too. Because where is the relief? Why not throw your hands up and say, to hell with it? Because you can turn to your government and you hear one lie after the other, one promise after the other. Then you pick up the paper and you say, well, they say we don't have money. Then you hear that this lie is just, we've had enough of that, and we learn that, oh, the city failed to spend millions of dollars from HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, which would have been useful in the housing and affordable homes. That's enough to make you want to do drugs. You don't want to be violent, but that is the problem. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Carol.
Yes.
Good subject. I believe we're coming to that point where, even with the Revolutionary War, we had the King of England taxing us with everything. Then we had to have the Boston Tea Party, and we had to revolt against a king.
Mm-hmm.
King Trump is here now, and these guys, these coonies in Congress and whatnot, and even our legislature and our council and the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just taxation without no solution. They just tax us till we bleed. And like you said, we become homeless.
Yeah.
Something needs to be done. People got to wake up and revolt against these
Yeah. You know, with great caution, I believe that Donald Trump has his problems, and I don't trust anything that he presents. But I also have to be honest and not lie to myself or lie to the listeners in suggesting that I think of all people that should be very nervous about Donald Trump is the people of Hawaii, because we see what government can do, how ill it can be, how sick it could be, how tricky it can be, how corrupt it could be. And I mean, I would think that we should be the canaries in the cave, so to speak, or the poster child for bad government. This might be a rallying point for the people around the nation to say, well, Donald Trump, we anticipate, we think you're going to do this, this, and this, and you're motivated evilly. But here in Hawaii, we have a living example of a movie that's playing out right now with people that are Democrat, that not Republican, people that are not Donald Trump, but the evil impact, not the evil empire, but the evil impact is the very same thing that we're worried about Donald Trump's management style. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does, because, you know, a friend of mine told me when he calls C-SPAN and he talks to him about issues concerning Hawaii, he noticed that the belt states, you know, the closest to Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
they get everything because they're closest to the people work in that area in D.C., and they get pretty much what they want for infrastructure, everything. By the time it trickles to the rest of the nation,
mm-hmm.
that's why. Hawaii's the last state, we get hardly anything.
Yeah.
For crumbs.
But, you know, it takes some muscles and some guts to go before a community and say, I'm chasing the homeless, because I'm a super manager. I went to no management school, university, and fail you. But the problem is a $20 billion project. Supposed to, that man, that should, everybody should have a loaf of bread. You know, I mean, because $20 billion says that that's what's going to cost to build this rail, which is going to stimulate the economy to some degree. But we don't see that, and we see many other projects that have been promised to be a stimuli. But then they turn around, and here's the same guy that lied to you and told you it was going to cost this much, and then force-fed it, is telling you there's the people that this thing is impacting, we're going to chase them, beat them, and deny them the rights.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the mayor or somebody to tell me what this consultant, Michael T. Burns, was hired in 2015 to do an assessment how to save money for the rail. And there's
yeah.
no report. You know, it's just fictional. You know?
Yeah, so the people in Hawaii should be afraid of Donald Trump because they already got a Donald Trump. And each of its legislators and each of its city council, there is a Donald Trump playing out. And I say that this is so people will understand. I don't know much about Donald Trump, but all the evil things that they warn us about, that they say, well, you know, we got to, the Democrats, we got to be careful, and this Trump is a bad person. And the very people that professes that are disseminating that kind of talk is part of a machine that don't give a damn about anything but themselves, their family, and the party.
Right. It's not where they listen to us. We're the employers. They're the
government. Yeah. I just found a couple situations where I'm going to be honest in drawing a parallel, and I want to be understood. I don't believe we should neglect and ignore the value and the quality of our environment. It's essential that we have a good environment because it nurtures us. It takes care of us.
Right.
That's our breast milk,
right.
The environment. But the reality is, by experience here now, we don't need the Department of Health. We really don't. We don't need a Department of Land and Natural Resources. We only need to be able to manage these things through legislative, because if you pick up the phone, for example, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, it was just brought to my attention that they just bought a new boat, and they showcased it on TV the other night. But none of these boats are used for anything, as we pointed out a while back, a tree growing out of the motor of a $300,000, $400,000 boat that never, ever was used to patrol.
Right.
But they spent our money. And then there's boats, and you go down to a Nui fish farm there on Sand Island. There's a boat sitting there that was brand new and just dropped. $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000. Money spending like it's no end. And you go to Maui. There's a boat over there, a Homeland Security boat. Humongous boat. Beautiful boat. You have to deflate this boat to get it out of the building. You know, and so what I would like to see is the mayor start with himself and resign, and then or somebody or some body inside of government chase the liars, cheats, and thieves out of government. And that's why we're seeing, to some degree, why we see our homeless population increasing. Because we got people that are worried about themselves, that care about themselves, their next check, to make sure they're going to get their raise, they're going to have their pension flowing in, they're going to, all of that.
Yeah.
And meantime, won't give us an honest day of work.
And the solutions for the homeless is just a band-aid, just keep moving them around.
Yeah. And it seems like they're acting as though they believe that the average citizen get pleasure from seeing them do something with the homeless. You know, okay, you call the tow truck and you say, we want these people moved out of Kaka'ako, move the cars, they're sleeping in the cars. Okay, and then you take the cars. Now you've spent money moving the cars because the tow companies don't give a damn if you got 1,000 cars on the side. They don't care. They want money. It costs them man hours and store. You understand? So why do we have this big chase and nobody, none of our legislators is screaming saying stop? What did they do? They went behind closed doors, special sessions and all to make sure that the rail got its what the mayor wanted.
Yeah.
It's priorities, right? Well, what about caring for the human being?
Uh-huh.
Where's the special session on that?
Yeah, it's really bad. And another fact is they increase their wages, so they'd be in compliance with the cost of living on their part.
Yeah, you know, the truth be told, the squad that you see chasing around the homeless, the cleanup crews, many of those people are people that had contracts or have temporary contracts or 90-day contracts, renewable. What was his name? He was Shimizu. I think he was a deputy director of environmental services. He's part of the crew on the city that goes around and you know, it's like, okay, under the limits. So if you don't get rid of the people, you think they're going to end up going somewhere else?
Yeah.
So you would think at some point, in my opinion, that the government would start to think we need to, chasing people around is not going to satisfy this problem. It's no solution. And Honolulu, Hawaii is supposed to be, you know, brotherly love state. I mean, if you know, the Aloha state, right? But you notice with this, you don't see that much now.
Yeah.
It's every day. It's the TV station's doing a story with the sad song of the homeless and panning the sidewalks of the street and what have you. Why don't they train their cameras on the mayor's office and the state legislators and say, what the hell are you doing? You know, no more free rides. You won't come on our Monday morning show or early morning show and sit here and propagate this nonsense. Do something.
Yeah, but we got only one paper, and the media and TV is corrupt, really. They don't want to make money.
Yeah, but...
It's the bread and butter.
It's something... I talked about the homeless because I was going to play the Animal Farm and draw some parallels to that, and I didn't. I'm going to write and get a permission to play the entire thing in its entirety, hopefully. But it tells us a lot if we listen. And I know many of us think about the homeless as wanting a free ride. Well, I'm here to tell you, brother, the only thing difference between the legislative process and the legislators and the city council and the city workers is that they're getting a free ride. They just punch a stamp a card. The very thing that they're accusing the, quote, homeless people, they're getting a free ride. If you call the state health department for contaminants in the water, nobody comes. And then you got to call them up. It's their job to be out there looking around anyway, right?
Yeah, they get paid for it.
Yeah, and then they're all fascinated. Well, how did the public find you to call you to go and respond to this, Carol Cox? So, to me, I try to stop and not answer that because I want to say, and which I'll say now, well, isn't that funny? You should be asking, why don't the public call us? Right?
Yeah.
Not, why do they call you? And I mean, they're fascinated with it. Well, how did they find you? How did they know you to call you? Well, that's a big question because isn't it interesting? You are the government. It says that you are the Department of Health and you are the regulators. So why wouldn't someone that witnessed a violation call the regulator? You know why? Because the regulator don't give a damn. The regulator is caught up into this game of our state health department. They talk big talk. Let me tell you, folks, if you think you're guarded against being protected against diseases and bacteria and contaminations and all, you're fooling yourself. What you have is individuals who sit in offices that were appointed by the guru from way back that sit there, get complaints, and decide, well, gee, that's over there at the mall. I know those guys. They got a lot of power. They know the mayor. They know the governor. They know. So I, you know, hey, lay low on this one. Meantime, crap is flowing down the stream, turning the stream white, purple, blue, and yellow. And then when the people call me, it's a shameful process, to be honest with you, and that they have to call a citizen looking for relief. I mean, I'm as naked as they are as far as authority and responsibility and all. But I get asked often, how is it that the public call you? And it's like, well, then when I call them, when they do get a call, they're not in. Or they want to challenge you and they want to tell you what the law is. And it's like, hey, dude, or ma'am, the crap's already in the stream. How and why they called me is not a problem. They didn't call you, but now that I called you, where's your muscle? Guess what? They don't come, they don't go, and then it's a challenge. You got to now spit into the wind, so to speak, to get their attention. And then they put it in the process that they're not going to do anything anyway because if these factors are going to come into play. Who's the violator? And who's protected? And I would tell you 90% of the people that work for the health department wouldn't know a gallinule from a coot. And these are two endangered birds that are impacted daily or with the threat of being impacted daily as we speak. people are dumping and trashing the place up. And yet, we shovel millions. So, these people could be homeless if we had the right management. You see, we tell them, you either do your job. But instead, they chase... I guess you gotta... It's more obvious. It looks like you're doing something if you're chasing the defenseless. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if you're a bully in government, you are likely to... That's what you rely on. You need an example. So, just chase them. Don't resolve it. Just chase it.
And I appreciate all you do about concerning the environment. Remember the dairies in Kauai and the Big Island. That was a catastrophe.
Well, you know, this place called Hawaii, we didn't find it to be in a mess when we got here, and we all, and proof of that is that we all talk about how beautiful it is. But I have been places where septic tanks and cesspools and got better treatment than our natural environment here. And mind you now, you got the Papahānaumokuʻea Sanctuary, and you have the James Campbell Refuge, and you have the Kaena Point and places like that. But when it comes down to the regular streams and all, drive by any stream and see how the maintenance of it is kept. Now, you know, some people say it's unsightly, but streams are, and this is why I draw this and I make this statement so boldly, as if I don't have any sensitivity, and you know, and that is, a stream is one of the most vital parts of an environment because it creates habitat, a nursery, replenishment of the fish, fresh water coming down and creating a brackish layer, that basal layer and what have you, mixing and these species come up the stream because it's suitable, but it's impassable. Sand piled up. You take, for example, Waimea. That should be a constant discharge, right, from the mountain, but instead they have to open it up when, and it's a newsworthy item. Oh, it broke today, and the waters. But what about the animals that the oopu and other species? The anadromous or catadromous species that come and go up the stream and rely on them. So just that in itself, they do a very crappy job at protecting that. And shopping carts and trash. And, you know, when you got so many people using an area, you're going to get trash anyway, whether they intentionally, you know, plastic bags, for example. You've been out to the park where you're sitting there and the wind, gusts of wind come and blows a trash bag, right?
Right.
So we're going to have some trash bags collections. But the idea is to have regular maintenance to pick up trash. But everybody's busy chasing the homeless or chasing their children to college. You know, but when the phone rings and you get a call from a citizen, they can't go. But as I was saying, with the DLNR, the perfect example, we've laid out several instances of fraud and abuse and lying and cheating on the part of officers and workers in DLNR. What do? The chairperson all circles the wagon to protect them and then still leave things in disarray. So do we really need... And when we hear this chorus, watch out for Mr. Trump. Well, hell, Mr. Trump has already been here in spirit for the last 60 years. And, you know, call it Democrat, you know. And so I'm just only attempting to be very honest about it. It's Trump scares the hell out of me, and so does the local politicians here, the ones that have been in place, because I see decay in the environment. So anyway, what about the bus systems?
with handy van, and I mean...
They got this rate commission that they formulated this past October, and it was on the charter bill. You know, last year they had a charter bill to have a rate commission for bus, handy van rates and parking rates.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have a meeting January 2nd, right after New Year's, Tuesday, at the Mission Memorial Building next to Honolulu Holly.
Mm-hmm.
And that meeting starts at 2:30 to 4 o'clock. And they have, it's in a small room next to the auditorium on the side. And I plan to go and listen to Cheryl Soon. I think she was a one-time city DPS director. And she's the chair of the group. And all the people that are on that, rate commission doesn't know anything about bus handy vans or parking fees because they're just appointed by 4 by the mayor, 3 by the council.
So Ray Soon, Cheryl Soon, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the gentleman I played who said transparency is really not that great. It's, you know, also private handling of public matters is okay, too, paraphrase.
Yeah.
As for Cheryl Soon, I think. And see, that goes back to what I say, you know, Donald Trump, you got to watch for him. He's going to put all of his friends in, you know, right? Hey, you better watch out for Kurt Caldwell. He's going to put all of his friends in.
Yeah,
you got to wait for David Ige. He's going to put all of his friends in. Hanabusa, you know.
You know, Carol, I called Handy Van to check on the 27 Ford Cutaway Handy Vans that were canceled for this year.
Uh-huh.
And they put in 4 on the road yesterday on Friday. They contacted Deputy Director John Nucci from DPS and said, "Oh, the mayor, where's the mayor?" "Oh, he's out of town. He wanted to be there and do a press conference like he did with those 99 vans in 2014
mm-hmm.
in Honolulu." But he was very upset that when they got these small MV1 minivans, you know, they have three people can sit down and then they have one wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Very comfortable vans. He wasn't called to do a press conference. He must have been in alignment.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to hear some more about the update on the handy van, if you would. In the next hour, can you call back and let us
know? Yeah, because Richard's out of commission. He says hello and I talked to him recently, but he's still hanging in there.
Well, I told him to call in, and many people are asking how he's doing, so give us a call back in the next hour. We'll be back shortly.
Okay.
This is the Carol Cox Show. We'll be back. Thank you for joining in. KWAI 1080 AM.
Carolcox.com, CARROLLCOX.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
Good morning again. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI, 1080 AM. You can go to Olelo at Channel 54 on Sundays at 1 o'clock or Thursdays, and you can see our show on the Carol Cox Show or a Bittersweet News. Feel free to go there, and you can also watch them on, you can go to YouTube and go to Cox 782-6627. And many of the shows there, thanks to Tina Quizon, has posted them up. And I think 8, 9, 10, 12 shows are posted up there. So, you know, just in case you want to get a little bit more education or a little frustrated or you want whatever you want to do, it's up there. And I encourage you to go there and listen. And there's some tidbits in there worthwhile remembering. But we're talking just back and forth on the issue of conditions here in the state of affairs, I should say. And it's an interesting thing when someone yells to you, "Watch out for the other guy." And that seems to be the standard practice here in the state of Hawaii. Watch out for the other guy. See, the other guy will steal from you like we're stealing from you. No, they don't say it quite that clear, but watch out for the other guy. He'll rip you off. No, they don't say that either, but you get the gist. But we need some compassion. Kurt Caldwell, David Ige, an office door does not insulate you from the responsibility as a human being to respect other human beings. And it's okay to be a manly man, but still caring about others. You know, you still could manage these affairs by being a little softer. You don't have to growl and snipe and bite. It's same thing with same results. It's still the product. The end results is what you've produced. It's on your watch. So a little compassion, maybe if you'd be a little more trustworthy, and maybe you wouldn't be nervous if Colleen Hanabusa put her name in the hat. Because if you showed some compassion and you surrounded yourself with good people, young, vibrant people, people that not from the old cesspool of the local politics that have been in every position there is to be in. It's a Kama Sutra of politics here in this state, it seems. You know, it's you pick up the paper and you see something, new program. Who's heading it? Oh, a guy that headed something back in 1920, but he's still around. Oh, it's not him, it's his son. Oh, yeah, well, that's the way the game is played here. If we can get away from that and be compassionate and incorporate some compassion in our efforts, man, you can work wonders. You can have people falling over you. You'll be the king. But you have to deliver something different. You got to start showing some compassion. For the last 7-8 years, we've endured this grind of chasing the homeless and just routing them out like the Gestapo. And I mean, it's like it dulls our senses, man. And we don't need that display because ultimately you're going to do what you want to do anyway, but soften the edges. Dull your knife, dull your teeth, your fangs, and become a little more compassionate. We'd probably see a lot better things happening here if we were to see that. Because compassion, it serves as a speed bump. It causes you to search your heart and figure how to approach something in a genuine, humane way, rather than, gotta get it done. Taxpayers don't like that. They're interfering. They're interrupting. It's just unsightly for the tourists and what have you. No, what's unsightly is to see you on TV every day promising, yet if you had another $1 billion, you'd do something. 888-5204 is the number. Caller, go ahead with your call. Go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, Carol.
All right.
Concern about the homeless, I called Ross Sasamura, you know, the director for facilities.
Uh-huh.
For the city. I told him about, you know, evilly they had problems with it with the sidewalks and other places too where they block the sidewalk, so us people who are disabled, especially blind or physically disabled, can't use the sidewalks because they block the pallets and everything. And sidewalks. And he said, well, we get problems with the Hawaii ACLU. You know, why don't you talk to them so they can represent you folks, because you folks have a problem, and they should be taking care of you folks also, not only one side. I said, wow. Yeah. That's the kind of excuse. They point fingers. But they don't, you know.
Yeah, they think of it as like, man, I don't want to get my hands dirty. You know, and you know, I've often wondered, all of these guys got some little conflict, you know. I think, for example, I've always had a question about, and I don't have any, Sasamura has some ownership in a driver's training school, you know, and I've often wondered, so some of the city workers go there and work. Is that clean? Or, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions, but I've often wondered, but these guys get locked in, and it's unbearable. It's enough to make you sick.
Right.
You know, I talked to a friend yesterday who works for the city, And he says, now, drivers for the white goods are running. They normally would be able to drive and pick up so many loads, and then anything after that in the days would be enough. They could make extra overtime. Well, now they're telling them just do 2 loads and then no overtime. So now there's a slowdown, they suggest. So, but then you can't only carry 24 on a truckload. When in private business, they carry as many as they can deem safely to get around the USDOT or Department of Transportation. You know, so it's, I think in 5 years, with the leadership and all that we see here and the legislative failures, we're going to see a crisis, and I think soon. You know, they're all looking up at the Grand Tower. And, oh, well, you know, it's progress. We got, you know, we got Howard Hughes going to do this and do that, and right? And they all get their salaries, and they're going to get a consulting job, and these guys will hire them. I mean, Todd Oppo, for example, worked for Howard Hughes. You know? He was working for the city council, then working for Jeff Stone, and Jeff Stone, he went to Disney too. So it's not to say that that's wrong, but it's always funny that why didn't he end up working for a peanut grower? But it all seemed to be things that benefited these people at one time, benefited from his services as a city council.
Yeah, connections.
You know? And I think that's why I keep harking back to Donald Trump. We're so easily, and we should pay attention here in this state, because these guys are masters at what they're accusing Donald Trump of, warning you about Donald Trump. Because they don't want to see their empire destroyed.
Right.
And I think the most nervous people on the planet today is the Democratic Party in Hawaii, because of the presence of Donald Trump. Not because of what Donald Trump brings and the threats that he brings, the civil rights and all of those things, and the inclusion of other people in the ADA and the gender, transgender, and whatever. They don't fear that. They fear that Donald Trump is going to be the what do you call it, the inoculation for corruption. Because he's if he gets his foot in here and deny them monies and all, that's the death of them. They don't have the millions and billions to play around with federal monies. See, so he could put a squeeze on us, and you know. So I'm not a praying man, but sometimes I'm tempted to get on my knees and say, Donald, please, you know, please.
Carol, you told me to call you about the handy van situation.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Right now, the rate commission that I mentioned earlier is going to determine how much the rates are going to be for each way for handy vans. Currently, we pay $2 each way.
Mm-hmm.
The projected request from the city administration, DTS, was to increase it 50 cents starting 2018 of January,
mm-hmm.
50 cents on July 2018 of next year. That's double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about $3 in a short span. And then thereafter, every January, 50 cents for 2019 and 2020 and beyond. And it's going to become about maybe $4 each way. Now, a lot of mm-hmm. people are fixed income.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be hard to use that service. So there was a bill introduced by Ann Kobayashi in 2016, called Bill 23, to incorporate a way to have people have same day handy van by using a 5 mile radius, and to pay flat $2 like what's going right now. If we go beyond that, they pay a higher rate if they have to go beyond 5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That bill wasn't written very very carefully. So at that time, you know, Director Mike Formby,
mm-hmm.
He rewrote the whole bill. It went from 3 pages to 9 pages, and it was reintroduced to Kobayashi and I think Transportation Chair Manahan at that time. But nothing was done. So The bill was reintroduced in 2017 of this year by Councilmember Chair Ron Lenore and was introduced as Bill 68. And Bill 68 incorporated where it would have a private or nonprofit company to be in charge of this voucher program where they could get this service. But at our last Citizens for a Fair ADA Right meeting, CFADR, on November 14th of this year at State Capitol, the person from Department of Transportation Services, DGA City, said they're going to do a six-month analysis with a company called Innovative Paradigm to see how they can incorporate this, and then they'll put it out for bid. Now, we have to wait 6 months. And that's how government is in the position.
Now, when you mentioned the Paradigm, they're a Sacramento company, or they've been involved?
Yeah, they're Sacramento, and they run the eligibility, handyman eligibility at that first insurance building by our
Yeah, they've been around and involved in these affairs for a long time.
Right. They have their hands in everything. They even recommend this software called Trapeze to the city.
Right.
And, Carol, you wouldn't believe what happened on November 14th. I was at the meeting. I conducted the meeting on the president's group. I had a handy van for 1 p.m. to go home from there. It didn't come to like 1:57.
Wow.
Driver took me over to the Poly, and I live right close to the Poly golf course around there, you know, before Hawaiian Memorial. The driver passes my house, and I said, what is going on? She goes to across the Yamashio, the lower care, you know, that facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, you just passed my house. Are you going to drop me off? She said, yeah, you be the next one. Okay. Then she continues on to Kaneohe before the police station draws somebody off over there. Okay, are you gonna drop me off? Because the next drop off was supposed to be Kalahipa Street by City Mill, and then Haula, you know. So it goes and returns back to Times Supermarket, goes back towards my place, and she passes my road. And I'm at college, Hawaii Law College.
Mm-hmm.
We turn around and she goes, and then she turns on my road, and then the guy in the back of Haula says, Are you going to the golf course? You know, the Kolau golf course? Yes. It starts right in the middle of the turn. And I tell her, yeah, I live over there. I'm the house before. And she almost passed my house. I gave her directions. So she told me that she was following the manifest. And the manifest is printed out on this Trapeze computer system that they use for scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put the report in, I called the second in command to handy van, and they looked into it. My response from Handy Wine was, it was backtracking, and that the driver was new, and she should have looked at her manifest, her printed one, and route where it should be the proper drop-off. But why are we having drivers routing when the system's supposed to do everything in its sequence, you know? It just baffled me. I didn't get home to 2:57.
And you started out riding what time?
I started riding at about 1:57. Mm-hmm. It was just like Gilligan's Island, you know, 3 hour tour, but much more or less. But just to be on the van, Carol, it's excruciating with the shock and the potholes and everything I have to go through, and then get home, you know, all ragged and rigged and whatnot. So.
I don't want to be cavalier and just sound insensitive, but this new pricing of the handy van is, to say nothing worse, it's nickel and diming people to death. Many people are on a fixed income.
Yeah, and they said they need this. I asked the director of Versace, West Versace, point blank, this extra $4 that we're going to get now, where is that going to go towards? It's going to improve the service as well. We need the money to buy more vans, you know, when they have the procurement, the RFP. And the budget right now is going to be in 2022, $64 million for paratransit. It's going to go higher and higher as the baby boomers start coming in and everything else. So where are they going to get the money? And I said, is the money eventually going to go to the rail? I said, yes, when the rail comes aboard, it's all going to be one pie. You know, like how Richard says, one third, one third, one third. But, you know, that one third for the rail is going to be much more for maintenance and everything else. So We're just going to be squeezed out.
So what happens with this, the... how do we stop it? I mean, for the last 3-4 years, we've been talking about this, and
well, the rate commission is going to be formulating this January, February, and beyond to July to have the meetings, like I said, at Mission Memorial every first Tuesday of the month between 2:30 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon for people to come out and to testify on their concerns about their rate. And then the rate commission will give their suggested rates to city council, and then they go through the process of the hearings and everything before they finalize and the mayor signs the increases. Now, my concern was, why wasn't the increases done when Cheryl Soon was the deputy director, and with Harris, then Murphy, then, well, they said because the price of oil and everything was in that bad, they didn't have to raise it, but they should have known that the population is going to start booming with people being disabled and have to go to dialysis and everything else. They should have increased it gradually instead of just doing 50 cents in a short span of 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, well, we weren't there. You know, the people there were in DTS, the ones that answered it, we weren't there at that time, so we can't answer that question. It would have been good to do it, but, you know. But that's the kind of mentality. They do a five-year plan, and they wait to the last maybe 2 years before they implement, start doing something. That's not right. You need to get things rolling.
So, what are the city council people doing? I mean, they've been hearing this back and forth. What are they doing? I mean, can't they just bring it to closure?
They have no solution because they're so bottled up with the rail and the homeless and everything. And when it comes to paratransit or the bus, they just increase the prices, and then that's all the solution. But they don't realize that the people nowadays, like you said, are being taxed to the max. They're too broke to go for... I'm too broke to go for broke anymore. You know, my dad's unit, the 442. That's my new slogan when I testify. I can't... A lot of people can't afford it. There are people can. You know, they have good income, retirement, everything. But for those who are fixed income and are disabled, the most vulnerable ones, and you have to go to this low to go after them, there needs to be some kind of balance between the two people who can afford it and can't afford it. And Ron Manor, I talked to him when he first came in 4 years ago or 5 years ago, and I talked to him, and he said, yes, his mother did right-hand Yvonne, and he's seen it when it asked him to his mom. And he vowed that if he ever gets back in public office, he would do something about it. I'm holding that to his word. He introduced Bill 68. That's going to be going forth, but there's much more to be done. Did you know the city council has a new committee, chair and vice chair?
Mm-hmm.
Utica Anderson is no longer the chair of the transportation committee for city council. It's Brandon Elefante.
Mm-hmm.
He's chair, and Kimberly Pine is the vice chair, and then also member Manahan, who's the chair of budget, is also on the committee, as well as Kobayashi Fukamoto.
So, Kimberly Pine is, I guess, they put her in a position where she'll become the new mayor?
Who knows, because I don't know who she is. I know who she is, but I don't know what she stands for. I know she has a lot of issues when she was in the legislature. And you reported that as well in city council. And I'm kind of afraid because those three that I mentioned, Manahan, Kimberly Pine, and Elefante, they're all for rail.
Right.
Yeah, so he kind of just stepped down and he went back to, I think, zoning. And then Kobayashi should be, was the vice chair when he got to transportation. She's just a regular member now. But, you know, these council members are going to be transitioned out in 2020, majority of them. And Elefante's running for office for 2018.
Running for office? You mean for city council?
Yeah, his second term. Because he came in when Horimoto left, and then he became the council member in 2014.
Man. How do we stop this? I mean, we've had these conversations for some while now. And
well, for those who want who are afraid of the rate increase, I would recommend you come down to these meetings. And if you want more information, there's a city DTS person who's a secretary for the rate commission. They don't have any budget to put out the word out there to in the media. They just, you know, post it on their website, city website,
mm-hmm.
and the city clerk's office and a bulletin board. But there's a lot of people don't know about the rate commission and what they're doing. So the person that's in charge is a temporary secretary for DTS is Chris Over. And his number is 768-8307. And he makes the agendas and he does the minutes, but he's only an active secretary until they find the money to get a secretary and, you know, formulate all these things that that person should be doing. So it comes under the Department of Transportation Services DTS budget for the rate commission right now,
mm-hmm.
until they can find money.
Jeez.
You see how government works? They make this commission and then they don't have a budget that they can use to, you know, at least get a better a secretary and then get a better location for their meetings and get word out.
Window dressing. Yeah.
And that's the sunshine law, right? You're supposed to get the information out, but they said, yeah, we posted on our website, but how many people have computers or are able to access that? You know, then they get out to other agencies or even the media, you know. Talk radio like yourself. Get it out there. Yeah. And other radio stations and TV stations.
Yeah, I get occasionally asked, well, do you ever ask them to come on your show? Well, the problem is they never ask to come on my show.
Yeah.
You would think maybe they don't like the way I talk about them, but it's true.
Yeah.
And if they were willing to get the information out, send me a letter.
Uh-huh.
It's always us and them. Keep them at a distance. That's their mindset, you know. And half of them couldn't get a job if they weren't. Oh, they'll get consultant jobs and what have you. But they wouldn't get anything if they weren't in positions to give away and steal from the people and be rewarded like some fancy hunting dog or retriever, right?
And then, you know, Carol, concerning the handy van, you know, I agree with a gradual increase, but not 50 cents January 1st and 50 cents July 1st of the same year, and then continue on. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a quarter in January and then a quarter next January, but not. But they need the money. You know, it's a money game.
Yeah.
And something got generated from $2 million now that it collects for the $2 mm-hmm. on each way, you know. It's just going to increase to another, $4 million. But the average Ford cutaway large vans range about maybe $110,000 each. And the new ones that are coming in, the 27 that they are built and coming in right now, have liquid spring shocks in the back of the van, so it gives more comfort ride.
Mm-hmm.
But there are three settings that the operator has to set when they're going on different terrains: up the mountain, flat. I forget what the other one, but how can they remember?
And we're talking just not your normal passenger per se in physical condition. These are people whose health is compromised, right?
Right. You have people with back issues, people who are blind like myself.
Mm-hmm.
When the operator slams the brake, I can't see what's happening. It's a really disturbing and shocking thing to go experience because I have a lap belt. And these lap belts retract automatically. You don't pull the thing to make it tight, so there's a lot of slack.
Mm-hmm.
And you tend to move as the van jerks, and then there's some women or individuals that are petite that slip right through the seatbelt and go down to the floor.
Mm.
And that's because it's not really sturdy that way.
And you're not wanting special care. You're just wanting the care that's needed to address the issue, right? Get you there on time, be
right.
safe. I don't know how you can increase this fee for the rides, but maybe they're worried that they're so insensitive, they're worried about their friends who's going to complain that these, the people with ADA or the people using handy vans, going to get something for free, you know, want something for free, right?
Yeah, as quickly as handy, the Department of Transportation Service for Cities getting these agencies like Goodwill and some other ones, ARP and CECO, off to get their own van pool.
Mm-hmm.
More people are coming into the system now. You got the Medicaid people from the state. They're going on to handy van because it's just $2 each way, where the state transport, I believe it was contracted with LogistiCare and another agency on the mainland, it costs between maybe $60 each way for a trip.
Where? So $60?
You know, you're saving them big money right there.
Really?
Yeah. And when Formby was there, I had him attend meetings with John Mizuno, who was the Department of Human Services Chair for the House. And his uncle had problems with the handy van with his friends who were on Medicaid going to dialysis. And he was being handy van for the delays. But then there were other agencies, van people that ran for the state to do the services, complaining to Mizuno that they're not getting the calls from LogistiCare for transport. So they're losing money. The vans are just sitting there and they have to go bankrupt. So, and eventually Mizuno at the end just said, well, Dr. Abercrombie.
Yeah, but did he get his problem with his uncle or whatever?
His uncle died.
When
his uncle died shortly after the last meeting we had in 2013, Mizuno was already out of the chair of human services for the House. He was already with Suki as second in command. And then he brought his PR person because the meeting was getting kind of heated and he didn't want the press to get knowledge of this. So he brought her PR person in and she said, well, if you have any problems, let us know so we can resolve it. And then next thing you know, we'll see the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, Abercrombie's out.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We got David Ige.
Yeah, we got Ige, and then you're going to get Hanabusa.
Well, I call her Hanabusa.
So. Yeah, Hanabusa. Well, hopefully, I don't know.
It's the old boy network, Carol. It's just, it goes wrong in circles. There's something got to be done. People got to wake up and vote. Our voter turnout is very low. When I vote, and, you know, my vote, last vote that they voted, probably didn't go through because I do absentee.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me if my signature didn't match, sometimes lying, doesn't match my original signature I have on record, they just put in a no vote count.
Is that right?
Yeah, I had to call the clerk's office, and she said she found it on the day of the election. I was going to go down to my, my district, and she called me, and she said, sir, we found your absentee ballot is going to be a problem.
Wait, let me. You're saying that because you are legally blind.
Yes. And my signature changed.
And you signed your signature today. So if I gave you 10 items to sign now for your signature, they would vary, huh? And so they don't. And they wouldn't acknowledge that because of your condition that your signature...
The clerk told me, Carol, she said, if you put an X mark, you have a person that can co-sign for you.
Yeah.
But that person that co-signs has to be on record when you're registered with them. So.
Registered that they can sign for you.
For you because you're, disabled. You can't speak, Or you can't write, like some people are illiterate.
Right.
And they can't write, so they put an X mark. My grandparents were like that because they were immigrants from Japan.
So you had grandparents that used the X too, huh? I grew up with people that my grandparents could write. There were people that actually their signature was an X. They couldn't write.
The original, I had to go to the archives for my lease agreement with my landlord, and it showed my great grandfather, and he had an X mark because he couldn't write English, and that was interesting.
So your signature changes from each occasion.
Yeah.
I understand now. And so, what we see on TV, now you would think they'd be guarded against that, right? And not deny you. Were you impeded or not allowed to vote that day?
No. When I was going to go down, because she said if you don't receive it by a certain day, that day, then you're authorized to go down and show your ID card and go register to vote in the district. But then she called me that morning, and just before I was leaving, she said, we found that, so it's going to be processed. I said, oh, okay, thank you for letting me know. But, Carol, how many other people have gone through this? And it was a close vote, maybe 50 to 100 votes, and there was like 100 people that were cast aside because their signatures didn't match.
And remember now, the Democrats tell you, well, you know, those Republicans out there, they're impeding people's voting rights. They're taking it. And here, you would think that would be no question, huh? They'd have, that would be taken care of, right? Have you complete unobstructed access. But yeah, I'm always careful when people warn me about the other fellow. You know, be careful, he has his hand in your pocket.
Yeah,
but there's nothing left because you've taken it all.
Right. So, Carol, I didn't know about this until I heard it from, I think it was a TV station or radio department, that, you know, if the signatures don't match, your vote is then cast aside. I said, oh, I better check into mine because I've been doing this for how many years? And I don't know if my vote got cast in. That could have been a deciding issue or, you know, I want to make sure my vote gets in.
So it's possible that they actually have, over the years, without your knowledge, wonder how many others.
Yeah. I remember Kobayashi's son was running in Manoa for a district for a representative, and I think he lost by, what, 70-something votes? I would have had a recount.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I would never have thought of that. I wouldn't know where to be.
So I'll call back. Are you going to be for New Year's Eve on your show again?
I sure will be.
I'll make the announcement of the rate commission so people know again.
Okay, yeah, take as much time as you want to, but yeah, it's getting to be bad, my friend.
Yeah.
And this is no. I'm listening to you talking, and what I have now, I carry a couple of jackets around in my car. And so what I do is I've been finding these incidences of more frequent now, where there's people in wheelchairs and they have the gown on. They've apparently been discharged from the hospital and they still have the band on.
Yeah.
And they're just rolling them out to the side of the road. And I mean, folks, if you think you're going to have a Merry Christmas, there's some of us amongst us that are not having Merry anything.
No, it's no compassion. Like you said, where's the compassion?
Yeah, it's one thing to be we talk about the policeman and all, but that's the how you judge the quality of a policeman. Some of them go above and beyond.
Yeah.
And they criticize policemen, but I've seen policemen even pull over and just do something to help the person, but the administrators, who's not visible in uniform and all that, they could give a damn about it. They're pushing these people out on the street and says, well, you know, we're not a hotel and you've been treated and your medical care ran out or whatever. And the last one I saw was an older lady, and these people are in condition, my friend, that they can't even use their hands to roll the wheelchair. You know,
it's a sorry thing, and then, you know, I feel sorry for Richard. I've been praying for him because I think he's in the same boat, you know, so I really hope that he gets the care that he needs, and then, you know, he's a nice guy, you know.
Yeah, and
he reads a lot, he knows, he keeps the clippings, he's very accurate in his point of view, and I commend him for what he does. You know.
Well, I think that amongst them, this whole thing, when the politicians tell us they do it because they want to do it for the people, and then in turn, once they get in, we've seen more legislation here that says I don't give a damn type legislation than anything.
Once they get your vote, that's it.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
And then if they don't get your vote in, they'll end up being appointed by the guy who gets the vote. So you might as well, you know.
Correct. Absolutely correct. But well, Carol, you have a great Christmas, and talk to you.
We'll see you New Year's Eve.
We can reminisce our your points of view that you did over the past year.
Yeah, which is okay. Well, thank you, Don. And
yeah.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, Happy Hanukkah, happy. Alrighty.
Aloha.
Take care. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Thought I'd play that for you just to need to belong to somebody. Anyway, folks, it's a holiday season and don't want to depress you, but give it a little thought. Look over your shoulder and don't worry about stumbling and falling. You'd probably be spared if you just give a moment and think about those that don't have much or the less fortunate ones that are being impacted in an unfair and unjust and inhumane manner. I mean, government has to do its job because nobody wants a freeloader. We know that. But if you got a little time or you can spare a dime, spend it, that 10 minutes, just thinking about what if it was you in that predicament. It's not going to cost you anything. I mean, I'm sure you probably sit at the traffic light sometime and drift off and waste time there, but and make the wrong turn. But it's out there on the streets, man. It's become a jungle, and human beings are being impacted
I'm not preaching to you. I'm just alerting you to maybe those things in your busy schedule you fail to see or by purpose wanted to avoid people. But there are some issues going out there that say that we are gravitating to the far side, the dark side, as human beings. And remember, we don't have claws, fangs, and if we didn't have guns, we'd be helpless. So we got here where we are today because we stood together. We had that pack mentality. We had a social that allowed us to be successful and get to where we are today, but not in a nasty way. So anyway, not being philosophical, I'm just saying to you is that your brothers and your sisters and their children's children are suffering. And it's all because of decisions that there are no safety nets, and many of us don't want the other guy getting something for free and what have you. But it's not about that. It's about caring. And if we can do that, then you can eat all the turkey and the ham and all those fancy foods and gather around the manger and just put up all those pretty lights and all of that and that tinsel and just have yourself a merry good Christmas. But don't forget about Joe, Bob, Billy, Kavika, Carol, or any of the others, or the little children, because they're out there, folks. And your mayor and your governor might be putting on a good show, but the reality is there are people suffering right here on these islands, right next door to you. Don't know where the next meal is coming from. But we have become a community that we will accept a liar's story about a $2 billion, $20 billion train, but won't give a damn about the man who sits next door to you in misery. So anyway, speaking of good government, I told you a while back, Donovan de la Cruz, I mentioned him, and he has a company called DTL. He's part of a company, and this Department of Land and Natural Resources needed a master plan prepared and done for the Alawai Small Boat Harbor. So Donovan de la Cruz's company won that contract. The contract was estimated to be $300,000, but somehow Donovan's company, DTL Inc., was able to bid $99,000. So I'm scratching my head to say, well, gee, if the state who needs the work see that the cost is $300,000, how is it that Donovan's company could come and do it for $99,000? But then it might be, and I don't know this to be the facts or truth, but it's possible. If you bid $99,000, then therefore you're $200,000 less than the average Joe, because it said it was $300,000 worth. That's what the state declared the estimated value of it. And so you'd bid $99,000. You're likely to get that contract. So in pursuit of the answers, I wrote De La Cruz, and he was responsive and respectful to respond. And aloha, Carol, hope everything's going well. Please see the answers. I ask him, are you an officer of the owner, or an owner of DTL Limited Liability Corporation? If yes, what is your title and what percentage of the company do you own? He indicates here, his answer was, I'm a minority owner, 10% of DTL. And what are your duties at DTL's? Communications and community outreach. And what are your hours? What hours do you work? I ask him at the DTL LLC. I don't have regular hours. And did you have any role in the preparation or contributions to the preparation of the grant proposal for the Alawai Small Boat Harbor Master Plan issued 4/14/17 for approximately $99,885? If yes, what work did you perform? He indicated, no, I haven't worked on the project. And then I asked, what is the annual salary you receive for work at DTL LLC? Then he indicates information filed and available with state ethics office. And in the state ethics office, he indicates that he makes between $50,000 and $100,000 annually for that service. Now, what is interesting is that this is a state senator, this being Donovan, and is it okay for a state senator to have a business interest in a business that get state contracts and perform those contracts? I'd ask that question if it's okay. And we're going to be asking the Ethics Commission. But again, the question is, there were a number of projects that had state interests and that they had gotten. Kaka'ako, for example, he did some work indicated in his bid packet, worked for them there at Kaka'ako. And so we're asking those questions to see if it's okay. And he indicated that I asked, were there any change orders after the contract was issued? If yes, how many and what were the amounts? Were there any amendments to the contract? If yes, what are the amendments? Was a time extension granted to the contract for the completion of the contract? He stated that, Donovan De La Cruz stated that, not involved with the project. I don't have that information. You may want to call DLNR directly and Malia Ka'aihui at DTL. So, the real question is, what is it okay as a state senator, heads of Ways and Means, or whatever his position is, chairman, to have a business that does business with the state? I don't know. You might think out there as listeners that that's quite all right. But it just does not smell like fresh fish. You know, and as a taxpayer and as a person of the watchdog who's mindful of these things, I think that in the interest of ethics, in the interest of fairness and what have you, because if you got this job and then you this contract and it's DLNR, so when DLNR comes to, and I'm just thinking aloud, but they want budget or they want a bill passed, well, would it be influence? Will they expect to get certain legislation passed because they know that you are in receipt of contracts for state functions? But nobody's going to tell, and so they keep that as our little secret between me and you, and who knows who. So it's this kind of thing, as I pointed out to you earlier, and in my opinion, if this is tolerate this, then imagine if you took that away. It sounds like it's the government tit is what being dependent on here for many of the politicians, and I'm sure there are others who directly or indirectly have their wives or relatives or sons or daughters involved, or you know, and so all of this. So when we see the homeless people and we chase them around, let's train our sights on internally into government and see what we can clean up and what we can flesh out. And that's not to say anything is wrong here, but I just don't believe that, in my opinion, that it's set well with me. So I appreciate you listening. Have a happy, happy, happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, and all those good things. And we'll see you next week. Aloha. Yeah.
Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM KWAI Honolulu.